Help us keep the shows flowing to your ears. Go to explorationsearlylearning.com, click on the Support Our Work tab, and show us a little bit of love. Welcome to the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. Jeff Johnson coming to you up from the upstairs studio today. Studio's full. We got Lisa.
Hello.
We got Engineer Tiffany.
That's me.
We got Tasha.
Aloha.
We got Kristen.
Hey.
And we got Mistress of the Dark, Josie.
Hey there.
Josie.
Elvira.
Josie, Mistress of the Dark. So, big rum and coke you're drinking, Josie. It's going to be awesome. So we're starting a new series today. We're starting a series on defining play. Because here's the deal. We find, one, that a lot of people out there in the world talk about play, but don't have a real full and deep understanding about what it is. So we thought a series on the topic would be a good place to start for sending people for reference. And two, we thought it would just be fun. And so the way we're rolling into this is Peter Gray, former guest on the show, I'll look up the episode number in a little bit, had a great blog post. It's a couple years old, huh, Lisa?
2008, oh, yeah.
That's very old.
Yeah.
And so if you're looking for it, it's Peter Gray's blog. It's The Value of Play 1, The Definition of Play Gives Us Insights. And we're going to start there because Peter goes into five kind of points there. But we're figuring that this series is going to maybe grow
50
into 50 or 60 episodes, because play is a big, complicated thing. Where we're getting started is Peter's first point. Play is self-chosen, self-directed. Players are always free to quit. And I'm not really sure we'll get beyond self-chosen in our conversation today, but we'll see where it goes. So, yes?
First time talking with Peter Gray was episode 106, FYI.
There we go.
Which is why she gets paid the big bucks.
That's why we pay her the big bucks, and she gets the spring-loaded microphone stand. So where we want to go? Play is self-chosen.
Well, it's pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, well, but what about all the play-based programs out there in the world where play isn't self chosen,
meaning you can be here or here, like I'm limiting your choice, or
well,
as in,
I don't know, or it might be you need to be here until the timer goes off and then you go over there.
But do you think folks who are that rigid in their thinking and that controlling, do you think that they would actually be considering that play?
Yes.
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. I let them play for 20 minutes at the table today.
I let them do this thing yes. that I picked out for them for 20 minutes today.
Yeah, that's not play. It's not.
And,
oh my goodness gracious.
And this is this is why we need to define this. So play is self-chosen. First, let's break that down, because it sounds pretty self-explanatory for somebody that gets it. But self-chosen by whom?
Well, according to the definition, would be the child. I had a professor who used to say that the minute you touch something in the classroom as the adult, it is no longer child initiated and is no longer self-chosen. So in theory, the environment would be set up, children come in and they get to be 100% in charge of the selections from what come off the shelf, or the selections of the requests to come out of the cupboard, and of where they get to use it.
So
like even me just putting Play-Doh out on the table as an invitation, she said, by her pure definition, that was no longer because I set it out.
So if you
which makes sense, but I mean I don't think most folks are ready for that.
For that.
That I don't think most children walking into a place
exactly.
If this kid has come from over here and is now in a true self-chosen, self-selected space, and they walk in, they might need to be told specifically, in this place you can go choose what you would like and bring it somewhere. And that could be overwhelming for the teachers and the children in that space.
Yes.
How do we get beyond the idea that self-chosen is what I choose for you? Because there are people out there that are calling themselves play-based, and their play-based is I am doing the choosing, and they're considering that self-chosen because somebody that works in the space was doing the choosing.
But didn't we, as the adults, even in the most play-based oriented environment, using the term in what we would say the quote-unquote right way, you at some point were still the person who decided what's in that space.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how far back are you going to pull this? Lisa Murphy has set up the Ooey Gooey Play School, and
back in episode 288, we did the Lisa and Jeff Open a Program episode.
So how would you make choices of what would be in there for day one based on our experience?
Well, we recorded this episode with somebody. I'll try to look up the number of that too. We had our challenge of taking everything out of the room and only put back in the things that the kids ask for.
Did not put it back in until you knew why it was.
Yeah, but I mean, our challenge was don't put stuff back in until they asked for it. And we had somebody do that. I can look up the episode number, but that may.
I would start with the bones, right? And uh-huh. I'd have the blocks. I'd have the dress up. I'd have the sensory tubs. I'd have that stuff as the 100% starting spot. So within those initial, if let's say it's first day, these kids have never been together, first day of school, new environment, then I would use my observations of how they interacted with that stuff to decide, should this stay? Does this need, you know, do we need more of X and less of Y? But I mean, you have to have something there to start with.
Yeah, because otherwise, why do we show up? I mean, we need something to do. So we've got actual real world on the ground or thoughtful early learning professionals in the room who are actually doing direct care. We had three. We got two now.
That's okay.
I got to know how self-chosen are things in your classrooms and in your programs? Because I understand there may be a difference between what's happening in your classroom and what's happening in other parts of your program. Can you guys talk to that?
Yeah.
Good. Because it would be really awkward.
Yeah, we can, but we'll.
If we put you on the spot, then you're like, nah.
Nope, not happening.
Not feeling it today.
When it is playtime, which is majority of our day, when we're not eating, basically, or sleeping, it's as self-chosen as I can make it.
Meaning that if I was in your class and I waddled up to the shelf with the manipulatives and the pegs, I could take the pegs and the pegboard and come sit on the floor, come sit at the table, and could start using the pegs.
Yeah.
Even if it wasn't peg time.
Yeah. You could even take those pegs and stick them in the Play-Doh. And I'd be like, that's a cool idea. What else do you need?
Mm-hmm. I would say my room is run exactly the same way. And I had to laugh when you were talking about kids not knowing what to do. And that's kind of where I was at the first 3 or 4 weeks of our school year this year is I had my room all set up, ready to go. They walked in and one or two of them ran to play, and so many of them said, what do I do? What do I do?
What is it time for me to do?
I don't know. What do you want to do? So that was a learning experience for me, and I think maybe my room was a little overwhelming with just the sheer number of options.
Mm-hmm.
But we have moved past that point, and they are very comfortable now. They walk in the morning, and they know that they can just take what they want and do what they want, and that I'll be there if they need me to get something else for them.
I also had a lot of kids that on the first day, for the first month or so, were just like, so can I move from the blocks to the art now? And I was like, yeah, like.
The detoxing.
You don't have to ask me, just do it.
So how do we best support those kids when they move into an environment where self-chosen actually is a thing? Do we step back and wait for them to figure it out? Or do we nudge?
I would say a little bit of both.
Or, yeah.
Little bit of both.
So what's that look like?
It would mean that even though as an adult at this point in my career, I would be comfortable with the stuff there and you just taking what you are needing and using it wherever, realizing that that provocation or an invitation of putting like this, the example I just used, to put a pile of Play-Doh on a table, have some rolling pins, you know, that invitation that this is something you could do in this spot. Right? So a little bit of a, would that be a nudge? I think the difference there would be that if nobody used the Play-Doh, I wouldn't care.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't take it as a personal offense.
How dare they?
I made this Play-Doh fresh for you.
Hey, Miss Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of done with the blocks now. Is the timer going to go off pretty soon? So I can...
Oh, you're used to a timer.
Well, yeah, because I've only been here for, you know, what? I don't have my watch with me, but a couple of weeks now. And my old place, we used to have to wait till the timer.
Miss Lisa doesn't use timers.
I've noticed that, and I'm kind of uncomfortable with the lack of control over my day.
When in this room, if you're done with the blocks, you can just leave and find something else you'd like to play with, or you could just sit back and hang out and look at the other kids' building, or you could find something different to do whenever you are ready to do that.
So I could go paint?
You could go paint. And you know what else? You can pick any color paint you want.
Even black?
Even black.
I can go play with Play-Doh?
You can go play with the Play-Doh.
Could I paint the Play-Doh?
If you were needing some Play-Doh to paint, we could make that happen.
Fucking awesome.
And see. Do you remember that one time? Do you remember that one time?
Was it at band camp?
No. When I pointed out how we say we want children, we say go play. And then the kids say, well, what do you want me to play? And what do you want me to do? And now we're attempting to create environments where we tell teachers, go teach, go facilitate. And they say, what do you want me to teach and what do you want me to facilitate? Mm-hmm. And I think the teachers have got to do their own work with this stuff before you can even consider facilitating this kind of a self-directed, self-chosen environment. And I think the adults need to feel that their management trusts that they are able to do that. I think it's a huge ripple, 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 ripple.
So are you implying people should have mission statements about how they do this stuff, and this should maybe be part of their mission or their written philosophy?
I would think, just on this, what have we been talking, like maybe 10 minutes, maybe, okay, 10 minutes, and I'm seeing just how many layers in these two phrases. I mean, and you joked before we got started, are we even going to get past self-directed and self-chosen? And just the little bit of conversation. And imagine if you had a team of people working in that one building where this could go that would be so specific to their environment. And I'm thinking that some of the struggles you'd be able to get through simply just by putting some language to these two concepts. Is this happening in our classroom? Is this happening in the building? So, do I, as the adult, get to direct and choose what's happening in the program, or is somebody sending a box and a kit of what needs to be done? So how the hell am I going to be able to facilitate freedom of this kind of freedom in the classroom if nobody trusts
if
I don't have it?
Yeah. Yeah. If we want children to have power and control, we need adults working with them who have some power and control. So, Josie and Tiffany.
Even perceived power and control.
Yeah, even make it look like I get a little bit of it. So, Josie and Tiffany, we heard about your classrooms. Now, is that the norm throughout your program? Or is there some... everything's on a continuum. And don't throw anybody under the bus and don't say anything you're uncomfortable with, but what's the rest of your professional world in your program like? Is everybody on the same page, or is there some drift?
There's some drift. There's a continuum. Some classrooms are more comfortable with child-directed choices than others. what was really hard for me at the beginning of the year is I think my, and it was part of the reason why we had this problem, is I think my students got a different experience Monday, Wednesday, Friday than they did Tuesday, Thursday.
Oh, so that lack of continuity can be really confusing.
Yes. Don't get me started. Yes. So that was hard. But, you know, I have seen, it's hard when you've been in this profession for 30, 40 years, you've had a set way of doing it, and it's hard to let go, let that control go a little bit. But I have seen people being more willing to do that. More loose parts are popping up in our program, and more freedom to actually do for the kids to do what they want to do with those, instead of, here's some loose parts, now build a tower with them.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and we've talked about it before, and that other people seeing this kind of stuff happening in a program, it kind of seeps in, and they're more willing to give it a try. Why are you got any, what's going on in your program?
I am an island in my program. I'm the only preschool in classroom in the district.
And what's, so what else is going on
I
in
have
your
a lot of freedom.
What's going on in your building?
In my building, I've seen it slowly start to change a little bit.
And what else is happening in your building?
My building specifically is elementary school.
Okay. So
we recently did a switch from, we were multi-age K-1-2 all-in-one room, 3-4-5 all-in-one room. And they switched to K-1-2-3-4-5 because they wanted to incorporate more play into the day at age-appropriate levels.
That's awesome.
And so at first I was like, oh, but the multi-age, like, you know.
Mm-hmm. But the intention awesome. Behind
the
that
intention
choice.
Behind it was so good. They wanted to add an extra recess time for the kindergartners. They wanted to add more developmentally appropriate choices in for the kindergartners that the second graders just didn't give a crap about. And so I think that we're, as a district, moving in the right direction for sure.
Yeah, yeah, good. So, Kristen, what's self-selected look like in your program?
Oh, that's all day, every day.
And you're the boss, so it kind of has to happen everywhere because Kristen says so, right?
Exactly.
So for people that aren't the boss and they're working with coworkers who may not be as far along with them, I think one thing we have to realize about self-selected is that self-selected children being free to self-select means adults giving up the power of being in control of the selecting. And that is a very hard thing for adults to do sometimes. And you know, this goes back to a lot of the burnout stuff I do. A lot of people that work in this profession don't feel very powerful in their lives away from work. And so in their early learning environments where they have this class of little people that have to do what they say, they've got power and they've got control, and giving some of that to the children can be a hard thing to do. This kind of relates to some of the stuff we've talked to Tamar Jacobson with about on the program about, you know, sometimes this profession attracts people that are I think broken is the terminology we use, and for some of those people, giving up power and control to the little people in the rooms can be a hard thing. And so if you've got a coworker or in your classroom or down the hall that's stuck there, it can be a battle to get to real self-selection.
The minute coercion enters the arena, it's no longer play. And I think coercion could even be stretched to mean if your schedule says that from 10 to 10:15, it's tabletop toy time. And one of the things I like about the intro that Peter Gray wrote to his listing of the five characteristics was that he said, just because they're doing it doesn't mean it's being done playfully. Right. You can have two people, two adults, two kids engaged in the same exact behavior, but it doesn't mean that it's play. Yeah. You got to look at their body language and their attitude and how much they're buying into it. So even though 100 years ago when the poopy face laminated lady I worked with would line up, she'd have six activities on one side of the table and six activities on the other. And she'd set the timer for 2 minutes and then you had to switch and you had to switch and you switch. She probably to this day would still argue that they were playing with the toys on the table or playing with the activities on the table. So to your point where you nodded so quickly that yes, some people actually do think that this is playing, but a couple of the children might have been engaged. It might have had 2 minutes of play because they really liked this thing and they were excited about doing it. But then the minute the timer switches and I'm no longer allowed to continue it, even though I'm not done, by definition, even though the child might have been playing for those 2 minutes, that would not be defined as a playful episode.
So a playing with is different than engaging with.
Well, sure.
And I mean, they may be sitting around for that 15 minutes or whatever it is engaging.
I could be engaged in something and it might not be play.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, let's make it personal. We've recorded episodes where it's felt more like we're working at getting the episode done than that we're playing at it. One of the reasons we've had so much fun doing the stupid rules is because it's very playful. And I mean, we feel that when we're recording it. And so even doing this, there's time where it's not play. I mean, one of the reasons I think we like doing this is that it's kind of play. I mean, we talk and we drink and we eat and we have fun, but some individual episodes feel like they're not
a little bit more playful. Having to push through them.
Yeah, they're not as playful as we may like them to be, and we feel that when we're doing it. So it's about.
But I also know that it would be self-directed. So if at the end of the day we're like, "Wow, this is really," we can just pull the cord on this one, or say instead of trying to stretch it out to be a 30-minute episode, we're saying, "Oh, this one's only going to be 15 minutes because we were kind of maxed out." And instead of just going through the motions, this is all we had to bring to the table to this one.
And I mean, a couple of years ago, we kind of did a bigger version of that because it wasn't feeling as playful as we liked it to be. So it's about time to wrap this one up, and we didn't even get to.
We didn't even get to point number three of point number one.
Well, we barely got to self-directed. We got to selected, but I got a lot more questions about directed because.
Self-directed and self-chosen.
Yeah. Well, self-chosen, I think we got to, but that directed, I mean, I think there's a lot. I think there's more there to, do you feel comfortable with what we've done or I just think there's more. The selecting of the activity, I think we covered that.
But then what I do with it.
Yeah, the how, the techniques. I think we got to break that down in the next episode.
Okay.
Hey, this has been the Child Care Bar.
I don't feel coerced.
Groovy. Well, even if you did. It's what the fuck we're going to do. So, this has been the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. Thanks everybody for listening. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for supporting. We dig you. We love you, baby. Back soon with another episode. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production. Oh.